Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. My guest, George Bodenheimer, saw the company from all angles, from the bottom to the very top, in his 33 years with ESPN, including as its longest-tenured president from 1998 through 2011, a period of exponential growth in sports and for the company itself. Back at the beginning, he was driving TV personalities around Connecticut. But as he demonstrates in his new book, Every Town is a Sports Town, Business Leadership at ESPN, From the Mailroom to the Boardroom, Bodenheimer took every opportunity he could on the way up and wound up leaving his fingerprint on the entire sports landscape. Now, ESPN is so much more than a fledgling cable network. It's an app, a radio network, a website, and a ubiquitous player in the world of sports. It's my pleasure to welcome George Bodenheimer to the roundtable. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ian. Pleasure to be with you.
Can you describe what ESPN was like when you first got there?
Oh, my gosh. It was, a classic startup. People running around everywhere, construction trailers, muddy parking lots, people working out of trailers. It was very exciting, but it was a constant activity. It was very frenetic and a lot of fun, too. We were all enjoyed being in the sports business, even if we didn't know what the prospects were. Happy to have a paycheck, and it was an exciting time.
And how much were you making at the beginning?
I was making $8,000 a year, which made my decision to accept a job as a driver in the mailroom a difficult decision. I had just graduated from college, and I presumably could have gotten a job for a higher pay in a more traditional sales job, but I managed to get an interview at ESPN. They said they might have a job as a driver in the mailroom. They might call me next week, and we'll let you know. And that night, I went out with my dad. We actually went out for a beer to talk about it because I was really unsure what to do if they called me. And my dad gave me and what I think is the best advice I ever received. He said, if you think you can be passionate about sports television, and I certainly had been interested in sports, if not TV to this point, he said, then you should take the job. You can make a career decision, not a money decision. Get your foot in the door and go from there. And fortunately for me, I accepted his advice, and I spent the next 33 years at ESPN.
What were some of the jobs that you did on the way up?
Well, I was a driver for, 4 or 5 months, and then I was promoted into the videotape library, where, as the name implies, we stored all of our videotapes. So if a producer was working on a baseball piece and they needed a clip from, the 1975 World Series, for example, he would come to the tape library, and we would give the producer a videotape that he or she could use in editing their piece. So I did that for a while, and then really my first big break came when a sales position opened up in Texas to rep ESPN in 5 states in the Southwest and basically sell it to the cable operators. And I applied for that job, and I got it. I later learned, Ian, that I was the only one in the company who applied for it, so it certainly helped me get that job. But it really opened my eyes. I was running around Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Mississippi, trying to sell ESPN to mom-and-pop cable operators. And that's how I got the title of the book, because I would go into these cable operators, these small businesses, and say, we have a 24-hour sports network, and we'd like you to put ESPN on your cable system. And the answer I got was almost universal, whether I was in Waco, Tulsa, Biloxi, Jackson, Mississippi, you name it. It was, gee, George, 24-hour sports sounds like an absolutely crazy idea. I mean, why would anybody need that? But we'll put it on if you're giving it away, which we were at the time, because insert your town here, is a sports town. And I heard that in every single town in this great country of ours that I was in, and soon struck me how important sports are to the fabric of the United States and every small town and every town. And it might be high school, it might be college, it might be pro, but sports play an integral role in the fabric of this country. And ESPN tapped into that and has basically been riding that for 35 years now.
So do you, it's kind of a chicken and egg question. Do you think the appetite for, I don't know, we're on to ESPN3 by now, and it's something you can watch on your smartphone while you're standing in line at the grocery store if there's a game you have to see. Did ESPN's expansion slowly and surely nationwide onto a lot of cable networks and cable systems, did that feed the appetite among the American sports fan, or do you think that already existed? You know, just the idea that you could watch sports all day.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is that the ubiquity of ESPN and then, of course, all of the other sports networks that now are out there, I think that fed the voracious appetite for sports content amongst fans, not only in this country, but around the world. And so, yes, I think the availability, and it continues to grow, has fed that appetite. I mean, we've literally never overestimated the fans' desire for sports, and the entire business, the entire pie, if you will, continues to grow.
I want to ask you about Sports Century, which was probably one of the first major documentary projects ESPN did. People now are of course used to seeing the 30 for 30 project and a lot of other content like that, but at the time it was a branching out for the network. Can you tell me how that began and what the goal was there?
Well, as we approached the new millennium, you know, obviously hitting 2000 was a big deal for our country in a lot of ways, and businesses, you know, all over the landscape are looking for ways to market, if you will. And so we wanted to do, you know, the last 100 years in sports, and that was going to be our mark. It was anything but easy, deciding who was going to produce something like that, deciding who could produce something like that, what to spend on it, who would sponsor it, et cetera, exactly what's the content. It was a huge, huge project. And fortunately, we got lucky. In effect, we picked a fellow who was already with us, but in a job out west. His name was Mark Shapiro. And Mark produced Sports Century with a team that was set up in Westport, Connecticut, you know, kind of away from New York headquarters, away from Bristol headquarters, and they really hunkered down and put this project together and ended up winning a Peabody Award and numerous Emmys, and it turned out to be a very big success for us. But I really think it helped open the eyes of our own company of what we could produce, and I give all the credit to Mark and the Sports Century team.
In your role as the president of the company for more than a decade, did you see diversifying the content, you know, as key to growing ESPN? Because, you know, there's only so many games on each day. It's kind of what you do with the other 20 hours, right?
Well, you know, I think a couple things there. One, diversity of product has always been a strength of ESPN, even though in the very early going it was perceived as its weakness, right? We were televising, you know, early round college basketball games or, you know, collegiate baseball, or early rounds of golf, for example, and you know, the rest of the industry was laughing at us. But what we soon realized was each of those sports has fan bases, and we were starting to serve those fan bases, and people liked it. So I think that, you know, A, diversity of programming always has been important at ESPN and will continue to be important, and sports fans do like it. Secondly, to your point, you know, ESPN is a company that follows its mission. It's why I think this book works on a lot of levels for business leaders as well, and the importance of having a mission and following it. ESPN's mission is to serve sports fans. So when a new technology comes along, like the internet, you know, 20 years ago now, or mobile phones, you know, 10 years ago, you know, there was really no question in the minds of the ESPN management that we're moving in that direction, because we know sports fans are going to want to access sports in the new technologies. So we don't spend a lot of time sitting around worrying about the proper format, the right technology, the right business model. We get moving and fix the problems as we go. But it gives us a head start on our competitors, which ESPN has enjoyed for a number of years. But it all can be attributed to following your mission and knowing that we want to serve fans better with whatever new technology exists today.
We're speaking with George Bodenheimer, the author of Every Town is a Sports Town, Business Leadership at ESPN from the Mailroom to the Boardroom. How did you decide how to be a leader in a company and, you know, what kind of manager you are going to be?
Well, I think I had a tremendous advantage, and I had spent 17 years at ESPN before I became president, so I felt like I knew everybody. I certainly knew a lot of people, if not everybody, and I knew I had tremendously talented people around me that knew their area, whether they were the head of communications or the head of production or the head of finance or the head of legal, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, just because I became president the next day, I wasn't going to decide that I'm smarter than all these people and I'm going to start telling them how to run their areas. So for me, it became a very natural transition as a leader into basically a hands-off decentralized manager. And that's how I viewed my job in 13 years as running the company, really to support the people, you know, guide the overall strategy, empower people and let them do their jobs. And, you know, that's definitely my management style. But I think I was guided by, in effect, my beginning in the mailroom and having grown up in the company for 17 years. I didn't have to come in there and feel a lot of pressure, you know, to be smarter than everybody. And I never tried to do that. And I wasn't. I just let people do their jobs and I supported them.
Something you do deal with in the book was the Steve Phillips firing. For people who might not remember what happened, he was a former baseball general manager who went on to be on the baseball broadcasting teams on ESPN and had an affair with an ESPN staffer. And you go through kind of step by step what you do in a crisis management situation. But you also write that you think a lot of the criticism of ESPN as a frat house, which has become a popular line of criticism, is misguided. Can you kind of explain that to me?
Well, I think it's an easy story to write. And obviously, you know, we've got a, you know, being in the sports world, there's a lot of, you know, people want to easily make a jump to a locker room frat house kind of mentality. That's the common thing that you hear people say, and I don't think it's accurate at all. I mean, we do have our problems, like every company. I mean, I get 7,000 employees, and you're going to be dealing with problems. My point to everybody that I talk about in that book is that, you know, you have a responsibility if you want to work at ESPN, a responsibility to act with integrity and in a way that, you know, supports the culture of our company and makes us proud of who we are. And anyone who doesn't do that, you know, jeopardizes their opportunity to work here. That was really the message that I wanted to get across, that we should all, you know, we're all fortunate to, A, live in the United States, you know, B, have jobs that we like, and C, you know, have opportunities to grow in those companies. But, with that comes a responsibility. I don't care if you're at ESPN or any other company. You know, you have to act in a way that is supportive of your company. And when you fail to do that, you risk your job, whether you're in front of the camera or behind the camera, the president or, you know, wherever you are. Everyone has a responsibility.
As we speak, one of ESPN's highest profile employees of, you know, really the last 10, 15 years, Bill Simmons, has parted ways with the company. His next move's not entirely clear yet. And you correct me if I'm wrong, you've been characterized as, you know, a friend and an ally of Simmons during your tenure as president. I just wonder what you make of his exodus from ESPN and what you think he might do next.
Well, I mean, I actually left ESPN a year ago May, so I'm not up to speed on all the ins and outs of exactly what transpires with Bill or any other current employee. But I will say that Bill, as you pointed out, was a tremendous contributor to ESPN, really the original, you know, internet writer star, if you will. I mean, he was a huge following. Played a big role in our NBA coverage and, of course, was instrumental in developing the 30 for 30 documentary film franchise, which continues to flourish on ESPN. So Bill's body of work at ESPN is significant, and we'll always be thankful to him for that. I haven't spoken with him since the announcement was made, so I do not know what he is going to do next. I'm sure it'll be significant, and I certainly wish him well.
As you say, you're now in your post-ESPN part of your life, and I wonder if you still watch it. I mean, do you still get into the games, and can you turn on SportsCenter, enjoy it the way you used to?
Well, Yes, I watch a lot of it. I'm fortunate too. My wife's a big sports fan, so we're not battling for the remote. She enjoys it as well. So yes, I watch a lot of ESPN, and I still do. Very proud of what the company continues to produce. It's in effect easier because I'm not looking at it, say, that person's under contract or that person's not under contract or she has a contract coming up or we have to renew that deal with this league or conference. So I'm finding it a bit easier now to just enjoy what's on.
You know, for you, what's next?
Well, I'm working hard. I'm raising money for the V Foundation for Cancer Research, which ESPN started in 1993. Serve on the board there and heading up fundraising. In fact, all of my proceeds from the sale of this book, Ian, are going to be donated to the V Foundation for Cancer Research, which we started with Jimmy Valvano in the famous speech at the 1993 ESPYs.
One of the greatest ESPN moments of them all, I think.
It really is.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. I thank you, and God bless you all.
Jim was so ill, he barely made it to New York from North Carolina. He barely made it over to Madison Square Garden that night. And when it came time for him to get up and receive the very first Arthur Ashe Award, it was almost as if the cancer had left his body. I mean, he was only 7 weeks away from passing. But he got up there and delivered a speech that I'll never forget. I was sitting there with my wife, and it's motivated us since that night to raise money. We've raised $150 million since that very night, and we're going strong. So that's what I'm spending a lot of my time doing now to answer your question.
We've been speaking with George Bodenheimer. He's the author of Every Town is a Sports Town, Business Leadership at ESPN from the Mailroom to the Boardroom. It's just been a pleasure for me to ask you some questions as a viewer and a fan to get an inside look. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ian. Real pleasure speaking with you. Thanks for having me on.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.